This is the first taped interview with Helen Van Leeuwen in her home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 19th of the 10th, 2010, for the City of Subiaco Oral History Project, and the interviewer is John Bannister. We'll also later be talking to Keith Van Leeuwen about his recollections of the area. But to start with, we'll be discussing with Helen her recollections of growing up in the area of Daglish, her recollections of the Jolimont School and the surrounding area. And by interviewing both Helen and Keith, we'll be able to glean a little of how Daglish has changed. Keith used to work as a truck driver for various industrial
companies,
thank you, in the Jolimont industrial area, and we'll be discussing some of those later on. But for the time being, I might just start by thanking Helen for being involved in the project. Would you mind if we typed this interview up at any stage into a transcript?
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Great.
Yeah.
Helen, thank you very much once again for being involved. Could we begin by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born?
My full name is Helen Ann Van Leeuwen. I was born in Perth in 1945, and we lived in Kalamunda for 9 years in a really old house. And well, looking back, we never had much, and what we did have, we thoroughly appreciated. And we came to Daglish in 1954, and my father built our house. But when we moved in, nothing was finished. We had no doors, we had no floor. And it took us a long, long time to get things together. My father never seemed to be able to finish anything. And we considered, my sister and I, Julie, considered ourselves the poor people of our street in Munsey Avenue, Daglish.
Now, this is the same house?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So we'll discuss how the house has changed in a little while.
Oh, well, lots
but
of way.
How old were you when you came? You were nine.
Nine. For instance, our letterbox was just the letterbox sitting on the front lawn. Didn't have a post or anything. And my father had electric cables going to our shed, draped over the washing line, and my mum used to get quite often shocks because all the rubber had just perished away. Things like that. But as I say, we were contented with our lot. We had good dress to go to Sunday school with, and we wore that every Sunday. And we had put our best shoes on and things like that. But
What were your impressions of a place like Daglish, having come from somewhere like Kalamunda, as you mentioned?
Yeah, it was quite grand, really. I loved the old houses. Our house was built after the war, but most of the houses here were pre-war. And I used to love the old characters. And in our street, we had quite a lot of really famous people. We had the Fitches. Dr. Fitch was living down the road. We had Miss Daglish, whose father was in Parliament, and she lived across the road in a very grand house. She never married. She had this beautiful fangipangi tree growing in her front garden, which is still there. Every morning she would pick a little cane basket full of fangipangi flowers and get on the train and take them to a florist in Perth.
Hmm.
We had the Merrifields across the road. They were footballers, and their training was in the middle of the street, and all the neighbours used to really worry because their gardens would just get flattened with the balls. I was living next door to a Greg Copley. He has become a strategic officer for the army. He's quite a famous man. And when we were 11, we joined, he had a club. And me and my sister and a girl down the road joined his club, and it cost us a penny to join. And he'd have us marching around the backyard. while he was busy laying out all his pamphlets and his old medals, and he'd get dressed up, and if we really behaved, we were allowed to wet our finger and put it in a packet of jelly crystals, which we thought was really great. And my most memory that I can say that I really, really love was, it's called Cliff Sadler's Park, and I believe it always has been, but to us children, it was just the bush, and it was absolutely beautiful, and we all loved the bush. All our friends in Daglish, that was our playground, and the flowers were in abundance. Donkey orchids with their brown and their tan colourings with the little faces looking up at you, they were everywhere. Spider orchids, blue enamel orchids, which were very rare, and when we did find one, we'd press them in our school books. Pink myrtle with its unbelievable scent, big spider orchids, cowslips, milkmaids, and rainbows, which would make into halos and put on our heads. And the bobtail goannas, they were everywhere. There was hundreds of them, and they each had their own, with its in each of its own coat of shimmering colour. And where have they all gone?
Mm.
They've just gone, and they had the big open drains, and the boys used to walk up through the drains, and we used to be terrified.
So these are the drains. Where did they begin, and where did they go?
I don't know.
They
don't know.
They started off on the Turkish train station.
Apparently, I can't place, but they all used to be open. But the park, as it is now, all the water, when we have a really heavy rain, it floods the park. And some engineer has done something marvellous because it just all runs away.
We can come back to the drains later on. They're not so
no.
But these were drains that your friends would
the boys,
walk through. The boys.
Yeah. And we'd all scream and run home. We thought they would be, we were terrified. They were dark and horrible. And
so they're big enough for the boys to sort of walk down.
Well, that was, showing off, I think, yeah.
How many people would have been in your little group of children in the Daglish area just after the war?
About eight, like people from our street here. We all used to play in the middle of the road as kids used to, hopscotch, and we never used to worry about anything, worry about not feeling safe, and we used to play in the lanes, and the lanes were all dirt, and there used to be dandelions, and we'd make metres and metres of dandelion chains, and that kept us occupied for a long time. My beautiful school, Jollymont School, my sister and I went there, and I befriended an Aboriginal girl, and she used to live in the middle of, as we call it, the bush, and I used to walk her home from school, and there it was, this little humpy with a little campfire burning with white puffs of smoke, and I thought, oh, how cosy, how comfy it looked, how lucky she was to live like that, and I'll always remember that memory, yes, and when I see people in the park, they've got a memorial there for the Aboriginals, and I see people sitting there, I always tell them my little story that I actually knew the Aboriginals that lived in the park.
What was her name?
Oh, you're no able, idea.
No?
No.
And what year, roughly, are we talking about?
1955, yeah. It'll be 1955, And apparently they used to go around and sell washing line props, because our washing line, and everybody's washing line, was just a piece of wire strung up with two posts, and they'd supply us with a prop, this long piece of branch with a V in the middle that we used to stick underneath the line to stop it from sagging.
But people do talk of these big changes in the area, and we're sitting in a house that's obviously been renovated. There's a back extension on, and we can discuss some of those things. You're talking about an Aboriginal dwelling in the middle of what was bush.
Yes.
Can you describe to us a little bit more what this little humpy dwelling was like?
Well, exactly, a humpy. It was just...
What was it made of?
Well, branches and bits of tarp, and really it looked like a little igloo, really, just sort of round, and you had this little fire going outside with... Yeah, it just looked really, really lovely, yeah.
Mm.
My recollection of the Daglish Station too, which has changed so much, because there would have been about 6 full-time employees working at the station. We had a full-time gardener. He used to do the lawn and manicure. They've still got it there, sign in Daglish in the little hedge. But in my days, it used to be always in flower, like pansies or anything that was in season. It was absolutely beautiful, and everybody would say, look at the garden, look what he's planted now. It was beautiful. And I often thought maybe Garden Elegance up the road would be good advertisement for them if they were to reconstruct that little garden.
Mm.
We had a man selling the tickets. We had a man collecting the tickets. There was toilets there. We had the big gears that they used to change the signals with. Somebody was managing that. And yes, it was really, really unbelievable what's happened over the years.
Mm.
And the trains were the steam trains, and with what's called the dog boxes, fit about 8 people in there, and we'd be sitting up there and all this black soot would get splattered over us and nobody complained and nobody said anything, and that was our lot. And yes.
We're talking obviously of a changed community. But what was the sense of community in the 50s? You mentioned you had sort of 8 kids that you'd rummage around with in the local area, but what was the sense of community in Muncy Avenue, I should say, in the 50s that you can recall?
Well, like our friends, we'd all do these things with. We'd either go to the park or play in the street with hopscotch, or get our tennis racket out and play. And the lanes, spent many hours in the lanes rummaging around. And people didn't seem to have a lot, like looking back, but we seemed to be more contented with our lot. And I just find in today's times everything's going so fast, and our children that are coming up have missed all that. They don't know how to play properly, and they're sitting inside and watch these damn Xboxes or whatever.
Well, that's right. I mean, people say that, you could literally sort of let your kids out to play in the early morning. They go and muck about all day as long as they were back for lunch and back for dinner. You didn't have to worry, you didn't have to think about concerns that your children might not be safe out in the community.
No.
That's another story, and I suppose it's another interview project at some stage, how the sort of generations have changed. In your childhood and in Muncy Avenue, what was the sense of neighbourliness, what was the sense of sort of interaction with your neighbours that you could...
Well, my father was only on the basic wage, so realistically, we considered ourselves the poor children of the street. So we didn't have what the other neighbours had. We didn't, have the clothes that they have, Yes.
Was there an interaction? I mean, you mentioned the Daglish across the road, Mrs. Daglish or Miss Daglish.
Yeah.
Was there interaction between the sort of working class and not, sort of slightly better off?
You used to go into each other's houses, didn't you?
What's that?
We've got Keith in the background sort of making a few comments, and we'll talk to Keith in a moment.
Well, all the children in the street, we were all very close, and we all were each, other's places. But as far as interacting, I suppose, yes, my mother had two or three close friends in the street that she stayed friends with for the rest of her life. But then most of them moved away, and then a different generation moved in, and you have the younger ones. Most of our streets taken up with young children now, so it's just reversed, and a lot of the people have passed away. The only original person in the street, Mrs. Tichborne, she was here when we moved in, and that's the only living resident, because I've inherited the family's home, so when Mrs. Tichborne goes, well then you could say that I'm the oldest resident of the street. And I can remember vividly all the people that used to live here, and they've gone, they've all passed away.
You're mentioning your house, and we see the changes that have taken place in the area, but could you describe the family home in your childhood at 14 Muncie Avenue to give us an indication of how it has changed? I'll include a photograph, if I can, of the house.
That's right.
We've got a picture here, obviously, of the original.
Yeah. Well, we had no back fence, and for a treat, we were able to fill the wheelbarrow up with water, and that was classed as our swimming pool. We'd get our bathers on, and we'd ask my father if we could possibly fill it up. He said yes, so that was it. We put our bathers on and sat in the wheelbarrow, or we'd be able to put the sprinkler on and jump around through the water and things like that. And when it was hot, there was no such thing as air conditioning. We used to either sit outside and grab the hose and squirt each other with the hose. And we did get a lot of pleasure out of Leighton Beach. We used to get on the train and run through the sand dunes and put our bathers on and get in the water, and on the way home we'd get back in the sand dunes and change our bathers again. And that was a way of cooling down, and it cooled our whole body down, and we'd come home able to face the heat. We had no such thing as fly wire or anything like that. We'd get eaten alive at night with mosquitoes.
The size of the back garden has obviously changed a little with some renovation that's taken place. And my impression is that quite a large block of land you'd be on.
Yeah. Well, as I say, we considered our house as, being not the nicest of the street, but we've made it the nicest of the street now. Good. We've spent a lot of love and money and hard work, and everybody says it's the nicest house in the street, so that's how things have turned around.
Yeah. Well, we'll go with their opinion.
Yeah.
In relation to the other houses in the street, in relation to Muncie Avenue, in relation to Stubbs Terrace and the railway line, how have you seen that all change?
The railway line, opposite the railway line used to be Mr. Mack. He had his shop. He had like a little grocery shop, and he used to sell lollies in a jar, and he was able to do banking there and postage, sell stamps. And his wife had cataracts, very bad, and she used to sit in the corner all day and just sit there, and that was her day because she couldn't see, and there was no operation for her, so she was totally blind. And Mr. Mack used to get his old push bike out, and he had like a little wooden cart behind it, and a lot of the elderly people couldn't carry their produce, so he used to put in this little cart and get on his bike and deliver it to the residents. So that's all gone. And he was lovely because he had, and I'm sure a lot of people remember the lollipops that used to be in the big glass jars. And Friday night, that was our treat. We got our pocket money and we went to the shops and we bought a licorice strap and all, a mustic and jubes and raspberries and all that in a little white bag. And we thought, we had it made. Yeah. And when I grew up, how old would I be, about 17, I made friends with a girl at school, and we used to go to the dances in Perth at Canterbury Court. And at night, when the dance finished, we'd take off our shoes and run and walk all the way home laughing and giggling, and we never thought anything of it. Mm. And it was also free, but I mean to say, you wouldn't dare think of doing anything like that.
Well, no. You were living quite close to the railway line. You could get yourself to Canterbury Court in no time, presumably, and you'd get, if you wanted to, get the last train home.
Yeah.
In relation to living in Daglish, you're obviously connected to Subiaco, except for the railway line.
Yeah.
Was there any attraction that you had for the Rockaby Road or Subiaco area that you can recall?
Yes, Rockaby Road, yes, it was wonderful. And we had a delicatessen there, and the man that owned the delicatessen, he had bright carrot red hair, and I'm sure it was out of a bottle. And us kids used to make fun of him and laugh and snicker and you know, thinking he was quite strange. And I really don't know his name, but we used to call him the red-headed man. And later on in life, after I got married, there was an article in the paper about this red-headed man who happened to be a Jew. And he had been in a concentration camp, and he'd been through hell. And he was the only surviving one of the family. And he married, and I don't know how many children he had, but his wife wasn't young either, and yes, he had these children, and I thought, you know, strange how these things come back to haunt you. You know, they always come back to that you've done something wrong. And we all used to think he was quite strange, but he'd had a very hard life.
Mm. Certainly characters in the area, and people talk of, you know, the attraction, obviously, that Rockaby Road might have had for the local
area.
Well,
that was the working class, and they had produce there, a shop that used to sell vegetables and fruit. And it used to be, you know, really second-grade stuff, but he'd have little wooden boxes outside the shop. And my mum used to go there and get what she wanted, and people didn't mind if it wasn't top quality. Mm. And that's how everybody was. And my mum was very frugal because she was brought up during the Depression, and she always used to say, if you look after the pennies, the pounds will look after themselves. And that's exactly, my mother's taught me a lot, but sometimes I think it's a bit of a curse, because when I do spend my money, I feel dreadfully guilty that I really didn't need it in the first place, so why have it?
Rockaby Road.
Yeah.
I understand, we talk of a market that was connected somehow to the corner of Rockaby Road and Bagot Street, and where the library is now, behind there, there was a Friday night market that people would go to. Do you recall that?
I can't remember that, No, I can't remember that. But we used to get a lot of eccentric people that, you know, we used to know in the street. And there used to be this really old man that used to bring his dog, and he'd buy him an ice cream every day, and everybody would make a fuss of it. But I often wonder now how sick that dog would have been, because, I mean, that's one thing, you can't give dogs ice cream. So
happy but sick.
Oh, very sick, yes, very right. Sick. Does something to their liver, I believe. Mm.
But you've seen, obviously, a lot of change in the area, and you mentioned, obviously, Cliff Sadlier Park. And, going to Jolimont School, we have Shenton College here now. How would you have described Jolimont School?
It was lovely, and it still is,
Has it changed much?
No, not really. They've built several classrooms on complexes, and they've built a big... open assembly area that protects the children from the sun, but When we went to school, we used to bring our lunch in just news, wrapped up in newspaper. The boys never had shoes in the summer, always bare feet, and always shorts, winter or summer. And that's how things were. Yeah, and we'd get a drink of milk in the morning. That was issued free, but I never liked milk, so I never drank it. They were the things. And sometimes in the winter, the parents used to get together and put all the milk together and put Milo in it and give everybody a hot drink of Milo. And we had the little tuck shop that was voluntary. My mum used to work there every Monday making salad rolls, and that was a real treat. Our treat was on the Friday, we were allowed to buy a salad roll. And they used to whip the butter with the milk to make it go further.
Now you're talking obviously about some of the experiences that you had growing up. As you grew into a young adult, where were the sorts of attractions that a young sort of teenager would want to head for in this area? People talk of, you know, you mentioned going to Leighton on the train.
Yeah.
But what about in this area? Where would a young teenager want to hang out? And people talk of theatres in the area. People talk of dance halls on Rockaby Road.
Well, we used to go to the Regal Theatre every Saturday afternoon to the, it was called the matinee then. But no, we never had a sort of any nightlife. The only nightlife was in town, and we were allowed to walk around and look at the shops and ooh and ah over everything. And especially Christmas time, Bones used to do their shop up absolutely beautiful. And that was a real treat. And when we were very young, we used to go into town on a Saturday night in our pyjamas and our slippers, and all the children were dressed the same. We'd walk around and just look at the shop windows, and that was our entertainment. But as we got older and we started to get interested in boys, well then the way we socialised with boys then was at the dances.
The Canterbury Court.
Yes, yeah, and the Embassy, but we were mostly at the Canterbury Court. And that's where I met my husband, and he asked me for a dance, and I had danced with him, and then he asked me for if I'd like a cup of coffee, and I did. And later on in life, I found out that he had said to himself when he asked me for the dance, he said, "She's going to be the mother of my children," and that's how it turned out.
He was right. You're talking obviously of Canterbury Court. You're talking about, meeting children at young adults of your own interest. Where did you learn to dance? Where did you get this skill that is so lacking these days?
Well, it is, yes, and fantastic exercise. I try and dance now, and I'm thinking, how on earth did I do it? Because we danced all night. It wasn't really, you're more or less...
So there weren't dance classes in the local area?
No, but it was mostly a little bit of square dancing, but mostly just the waltz, you know, we used to do. And they had a fantastic band, and all that old music, oh, it was beautiful. And I hear it on the curtain radio now, and I think, oh, that was a beautiful era. And the girls used to, you know, always look so feminine. And there was no drinking, there was no alcohol. My father never had any alcohol in the house. Maybe at Christmas we had a little glass of sherry. And my mother used to say to me, when you go out and somebody offers you a drink, let them fill your glass up, but just take a little sip and keep your glass full all night so they won't be able to refill it again. And so that's how it was, yeah. We were brought up quite strict, really. My father was very Victorian, and we weren't allowed to talk at the table, and things were a little bit difficult at times, but we managed.
In this Daglish area, you obviously lived in Daglish all your life, pretty much. When you look at the changes that you see, when you see, you know, that the bush that's disappearing, What do you say? I mean, there are so many changes that we could talk about, that up and down the railway line. Stubbs Terrace, the railway itself has changed so much.
Yeah.
It's still there, but it's different train, different situation. No fences in the past.
No, I don't like
We've got the subway underneath the train, not that far away. What about the subway at the end here?
The subway
coming... Just on the end of Nicholson Road. The subway, the bridge.
Oh, yes, the bridge.
That's presumably always been
there. Yes, it has. And many a truck's got stuck under there. And they've just made a new subway for the bikes to go under, which was a lot of money.
Mm.
But they've made the rail along the railway line very nice. They've got a bicycle path there now and a lot of native plants and everything. It's really very nice, and I think that's excellent. That part that I like with the change, but all like Subi Centre and that, I think it's unbelievable. Well, I don't like it.
We can talk about some of that with Keith about the sort of industrial area, the Subiaco train station of old, where there would be stockyards almost and the various factories and so on that were nearby. What are your recollections of that particular area? Did you have any associated with growing up?
No. It was very industrial, like, you know, there was a lot of noise and we had the... What were those gas... What was the gas company that worked there?
CIG.
And
are we talking to about all of that?
Yeah. No, I really can't remember. I can remember the Subiaco station, which was... It's a shame that it's gone. I think they should have left it there. That was quite unique. And we used to walk a lot from Daglish to Subi and to do our shopping there, and we'd carry it all back by hand and everything. But that's my recollection of Daglish. Mm. And now I've come back and this is where I'll die, so Daglish is my home.
You moved away for a while?
Yeah, when I got married, yes, we moved and we had a full life, my husband and I. We had two sons, Shane and Mark. And
where did you move to?
Well, believe it or not, we moved to Balga. We got a state housing home. We had a little bit hard, well, not a little bit, very hard in the beginning, but as everybody says, we were all in the same boat.
Mm.
My father badly wanted us to buy an old house in Subiaco, and I thought, I don't want to live in an old house, which they were little and they were old. So, no, we got our Homes West home. It was called state housing then, in Balga for $8,000, and it was going to take us until we were 73 before we would pay the house off. And then the area wasn't very nice, it was a bit rough, and my husband said, we've got to move from here because I'm not bringing the children up here. So we moved to Hammersley, and we... lived there for quite some time, about 20 years, and then we moved to Bullsbrook and had like a little hobby farm, and we lived there for 10 years. Mm. And we've been back in Daglish for 11, 12 years. Mm. So we've lived
sort of the full
quite
circle.
A few lives. Yes. And my son, my eldest son, Shane, he's a pharmacist and he's in charge of the manufacturing of... the chemotherapy, so he's got quite a responsible job, and he lives in the street at the back of us in McCullum Street. And my other son, Mark, my younger one, he's a storeman at Woolies, and he's got two sons, but he lives in Balladura, so that's quite a way.
You're talking about these different areas, and you mentioned Balga, and you were mentioning you could actually have bought a small place in Subiaco.
Oh, I wish.
Not that long ago. These little areas were still fairly cheap.
Yeah.
In Balga now, you'd be hard pushed to get into there now. But places you could buy a small place in Subiaco, a small working class cottage, and do it up, and
them now.
You just wouldn't
look at them now. Yeah,
wouldn't be able to to get there in the same way as you might not that long ago. And in relation to how you've seen that change, I mean, you've mentioned, you know, the way your house has been improved over the years. But if you look at Subiaco and Daglish together and how, you know, we see in the metropolitan area this whole
Daglish was more upper class than Subiaco. Subiaco was the poor man's area, they used to say, the working man's area, where Daglish had that bit of a polish to it. But Daglish has never really taken off like Subiaco or Shenton Park. It's always stayed behind, whereas Subi, you know, it's unbelievable how the people have restored all those beautiful old homes. Absolutely beautiful. But people didn't want old homes in those days.
Mm.
They just wanted new homes. Mm. Well, things have changed.
Well, Helen, as the bell tolls, I'd like to thank you very much for your input for all of this.
Thank you.
And we'll just swap over.
Thank you.